the Alaska World Affairs Council Presents on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Kristen Spack. The Alaska World Affairs Council brings the world to Alaska. World leaders, journalists, authors, educators, and entrepreneurs join Alaskans in a conversation about world affairs. This week, Eric Brown, co-founder and CEO of Impact Games, asks, can video games promote peace? Eric Brown is the co-founder and CEO of Impact Games, which uses video games to engage people in current events. Peacemaker, for example, a video game simulation of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, challenges players to succeed as a leader where others have failed, ultimately bringing peace to the Middle East or plunging the region into disaster. In November 2007, on the day of the International Peace Summit in Annapolis, the Peres Center for Peace distributed 100,000 copies of this game to Israel and the West Bank. Another game developed by Impact is called Play the News, which brings gaming elements to the online news industry. It requires the readers to change from passive to active consumption of current events. Listed among 100 social entrepreneurs changing the world in Newsweek Japan, Eric Brown co-founded Impact Games to influence society, promote change, and cross-cultural understanding through interactive media. Before Impact Games, Brown helped found Issue Design Build, creating custom commercial spaces from music stores to beauty salons from Seattle to Los Angeles. He holds a Master's of Entertainment Technology from Carnegie Mellon and received a BFA in Painting with Focus Studies in Education and Computer Graphics from Washington University in St. Louis. After speaking with students at West High School on Friday, January 23rd, Eric Brown spoke at the Alaska World Affairs Council in Anchorage, Alaska, asking audience members to consider, can video games promote peace? You can view Brown's slideshow presentation and link to all the video games he previews on our website. It's kska.org. In partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council, KSKA presents the co-founder and CEO of Impact Games, Eric Brown.
Well, thank you very much for the great introduction, and thank you all for having me here. It's quite a backdrop behind you, so if I doze off in the middle of my speech, that's why. She covered pretty much my whole background, so I guess I can jump right into what we're doing. But the idea there exactly is that we came out of Carnegie Mellon University's Entertainment Technology Center. Many of you may have read about Randy Pausch, the last lecturer. He was actually the founder of our program and one of our professors. And so it had a very unique flavor to the idea of taking entertainment technology and applying it to different things. And it was known as sort of a pioneer in serious games, from language learning to other types of projects like that, hazmat, hot zone, first responder training, things like that. So that's kind of the environment where Peacemaker began and where Impact Games came from. So when we actually went to, I'll start with sort of the history and some of the products we did, and then take you on a tour of serious games and some things you might not know that are going on out there. And we sort of came into Peacemaker saying that, you know, not specifically that we're going to do the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, though my co-founder is from Israel, and we were trying to pick a subject matter that, you know, is relevant globally and sort of has been a hit list and that we don't think that people understand very well. But also that we were video game players. I mean, we're of the older generation of video game players. But this is what was happening in the news about video games, and especially when we were starting. And, you know, this is everybody's conception of what video games are. And it went so extreme that there was people coming out that you may know saying that this was the silent epidemic that was going to ruin our youth and all these types of things. Now, I'm not going to say that there isn't some poor content out there in video games, but video games are also very good for a lot of other different reasons. And much like other sort of media genres have gone through, I think you could start with sort of television. I mean, you could go all the way back to books if you really wanted to, but television went through this where it was going to be the end of, you know, society, the end-all be-all of our youth. Films went through this same thing. You know, a really good example would be comic books, that it was, you know, destroying the youth of America and all of our ideals and things like that. And so a good example for where we were going in the pitch of why we should do this and where it was going was Art Spiegelman wrote a graphic novel called Mouse, and he ended up winning the Pulitzer Prize for it. And it's about sort of his family's history with the Holocaust. And what's really great about this is that it shows that you know, here's a medium that's being sort of lambasted for all the negative things, and then here's a story that really, because of the symbolism he was able to do, because of the nature of the medium, was able to make the story even more powerful in a way that really he couldn't have done with just the written word or with a documentary film or something like that. So showing how, you know, all of these mediums need to grow up at some point. And though they might start off as the 89% of all video games are violent and degrading to women and all those types of things, that the power of the medium itself is much more than just what's being portrayed. So we created Peacemaker, and it is a video game about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You know, we met with lots of people. I'll come to that a little bit later. But one of the cores of it was that video games are really great for allowing you to empower yourself to take the shoes of somebody else. So some of the major issues in conflict resolution are, how do you get somebody to imagine what it means to be from the other perspective? Well, video games are great for that. So, you know, we made the very conscious decision that you could play as the Palestinian president or the Israeli prime minister. Now, obviously, they have very different sort of objectives. They have very different menu items of things they can do, from the Israeli side having a lot more, you know, military capacity, whereas the Palestinian side doesn't. And we wanted to set out to create those as very different sides of the same sort of narrative. And I'll show you how it sort of looks, in that when we used the tagline, play the news, obviously we didn't want to make this sort of a fictitious story. It wasn't about ogres, dragons, things like that. It was about real people. So it was very important that people playing our game understood that. So as much as possible, we incorporated real videos from events that happened, real events that happened. And in this case, this was sort of the first thing that you face when you're playing the Palestinian perspective, and obviously very relevant to things that have been going on the last 2 weeks. This is, you know, a shelling in Gaza that had civilian casualties. And what we really wanted to do is sort of put you right in the position of the leader, understand what we consider sort of one of the major issues, which is obviously the loss of life in any conflict, and then put you into how can you actually sort of advance these things. When we talk about sort of the history of games in general, you look at chess, checkers, all those types of things, most games create their tension by me playing against somebody else. And they're usually generally about conquest. And so we had to sort of, in creating this game about conflict resolution, figure out, well, where is the tension and how do we create that game, which makes it compelling to play, but also something that you can learn from. And I don't know how many of you can see this in the back, but so along the bottom, there's sort of a simplified list of groups and leaders. We're playing the Palestinian president in this case, so the groups are things like Hamas, Fatah, things like that. And then on the bottom left, you have two scores, and one is your national approval, as one is your world approval. So when you talk about conflict resolution a lot, you hear the ideas of zero-sum game and those types of things, where any action that you take might be beneficial for one, you know, group or set of groups and negative to another set of groups. So the way that you win our game is you actually have to get both of those scores up to 100. So if you lose on either side, you know, you either start the third intifada or you lose the support of your people or thrown out of offices, those types of things. For the Israeli side, it's a different one. It's about sort of security and then trust of the Palestinians and a lot of the underlying core issues. I mean, I'm going to leave it till the end, and if you have questions, I can show you some slides about how we actually, you know, modeled those things out. But the idea is that, you know, it's a great, video games are great for cause-effect relationships. So I can take an action in the world and I can see how all the different groups react. And that's the kind of complexity that you don't get from just reading an article. And I'll talk about it a little more in sort of our future product, but this is what people mostly learn about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. These moments in time, or a suicide bomb, or a rocket in southern Israel, or something like that. But without understanding who the groups are and how they react and why, you know, Israel responded the way it did. So what were the groups', you know, interests below that? You don't really get a better sense of the complexity of the issue. And so video games allow you to explore that. They allow you to take the other perspective in ways that you couldn't through other mediums. So this is just an example of what the interface looks like. You can take military, diplomatic, construction actions. We don't necessarily, you know, hold you back from doing some of the things like missile strikes, because there are very real reasons why those things happen. You should see, you know, under what circumstances those occur. One of the major things that we built it on is, you know, there's things like the Model UN, and there's a lot of things that are tools that are used for allowing people to role play negotiation situations and things like that. The difficulties of those are that it might take, you know, a couple hours, if not more, for everybody to learn their part, to understand what all the groups that they're supposed to be representing mean and things like that. So it's time intensive from that standpoint. And it's also hard to really force that person to feel and respond to the pressures of the groups they're representing. So maybe we're just tired, so we negotiate peace in the Middle East in 5 minutes. Or maybe I just don't like the person that's sitting across from me, so whatever he says, I'm like, no, 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 not having it. And so does that really help you understand, you know, those pressures and what the complexity of the situation is in any way that it helps you to understand what's going on in the world? Obviously, I've learned a lot more since we started this project and have lots of friends from both sides from beginning before this project. But we went out and we enlisted lots of people from the Israeli government, Israeli NGOs, Palestinian government officials, and those are the people that we needed to engage. And again, some of the challenges of creating a game like this is I can't put a spreadsheet of variables in front of some of these people and say, does this look accurate? So there was a lot of sitting down with them playing. And for us, it wasn't so much, obviously, if I was able to statistically create a model of the peace negotiations in the Middle East, I wouldn't be here with you guys, though I'd love to be. I would be in Sweden collecting a big gold medal and things like that. So it was much more about matter of, you know, what did we want the other side to understand, like their narrative. If I was an Israeli, what would I want somebody who sort of ascribes to the Palestinian perspective to know better by playing my perspective and vice versa? In the broader sense of conflict resolution, some would say that it's better for you to play a game like this about something that isn't your conflict to learn the ideas of conflict resolution because of your emotional attachment to the subject matter might make it even more difficult. We have done so. Some of the things that we did was, I'm gonna skip some of this because we've got some time and I'd love to get some questions. And here's just a couple quotes of what people got from it. So the idea was that in 2 to 4 hours of playing Peacemaker, people said they understand better the, you know, the issues that they've been seeing in the news for years and years and years. We did a project with CMU in Pittsburgh where they have a campus in Doha. And so we did a teleconference class when we were still in development where we had students from some different regions playing the game and then discussing it afterwards. And so that's one of the ones where I guess I don't have the quote here. But the basic premise was they started quoting our game when they were saying, well, when I was the Palestinian president, or things like that. And so it was very powerful for helping them to sort of express what they felt and what they thought about these things. So in terms of creating that dialogue, as she said, we did a distribution deal with the Peres Center for Peace where we distributed 100,000 games through newspapers, Al-Quds in the West Bank and in Gaza, and Haaretz in Israel. And it's also being used in community centers and things like that to try and facilitate that kind of conversation, to get them to play the other's perspective in a way that gets them thinking in ways about it that they may never have before. So that's sort of a little backstory on Peacemaker. I could go on, obviously, longer about it, but I want to talk to you about how we sort of segue that into our newest one, and then I don't want to just talk about things we're doing. I want to show you some other things. But so when we were traveling the world talking about Peacemaker, there was interest of, you know, could you create this for India, Pakistan? Could you create it for Northern Ireland? Could you do it for local gangs? Could you do it for some other social issue that I care about? Because they saw the benefit of looking at complex issues in this way, modeling out these systems, allowing those sort of conflict resolution conversations. And we just don't have the resources to create all those titles. And so we were thinking, okay, well, so we need to be able to address more subject matter. People asked us, can you push, you know, what just happened last week into the game? And so technically speaking, we did figure out how we could sort of push new content to the game, but from a replayability, I mean, it's sort of a game you want to play for 2 to 4 hours. You get the basic concepts of it. And from a business cost standpoint, it didn't make sense. And it also, unfortunately, the underlying issues that are driving the conflict right now haven't drastically changed, even with the things that just happened. I mean, they may shift in terms of where some of these things are going on, but so there was that. And then people would write us long letters about how they thought differently about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict after playing Peacemaker. Now, it was great for us to read those, but how could we share those with the community, and how could we make that type of engagement sort of live in real time? So we looked at news, and we said, okay, how can we create these so that we have a community, people can interact, we can create these around stuff. And the news industry is sort of in a state of flux right now, as everybody knows, as it moves online. And that feedback to Peacemaker was really great in contextualizing, we have our inciting incident, but you have all this wrapped up knowledge that helps you to understand what that article is, whether it's you didn't know who Hamas was, so how would you understand what that article means, those types of things. So this is the New York Times, and this is one of their articles, and this was definitely one of the more complex ones because it was when the economy was collapsing. But if you look at it, there was some 20-odd links within that article to things that were hot words that you might not know, so that you would have to go read those if you really want to understand the complexity. So this is, you know, better than just a newspaper where I would have to go to the library to look these things up, which I'm probably definitely not going to do. This is still time-consuming and sort of leads to people, in my mind, learning less about the complex issues by looking at things like RSS feed readers. And so you look at your Yahoo News and you take a look at all the headlines and you feel like you know what's going on in the world. But do you really understand in any deep way any of those issues or how they interconnect with each other? So people are starting to interact on the web in ways that are very interesting in terms of social networks, the YouTubes. I mean, if you look at some of the political campaigns recently and how they mobilize people in new ways, and there is a deep and rich sort of level of content out there, it's just not really being addressed and integrated into the news content. There's a lot of gambling that goes along with news content. These are sort of celebrity NASDAQs. You can bet on how many headlines your favorite celebrity will be in next week and those kinds of things. And very fun. I don't think they're making us smarter by any stretch of the imagination. But, I mean, they do promote engagement in current events. So I'm not going to slam them, and I think they're great. I look at fantasy football. I play fantasy football. But this is a game where it's really all about the community gaming around it. So one of the issues we had with Peacemaker was we projected into the future. So there's an editorial element no matter what. And that was my underlying assumption side of, you know, if I'm going to project into the future, I'm making clear decisions of what wins the game and things like that. So how can we pull some of that out, make it around that community so the gambling elements come in? Am I smarter than somebody else? Can I predict the news? And we were really driven by the idea of if you look at fantasy football, people consume news about teams that they don't care about, that are never going to make the playoffs, they will never win, and somebody got drafted and is a third string on some team that I've never even seen, and I know his stats from last week's game. Now, that's phenomenal consumption of information. It'd be better if it was different information or there was other information. So that's what we kind of looked at and said, could we do that same thing for other current events? So, unfortunately, we just sort of shut down our beta site version of this, but we created a new site where we aggregated all the games that we created, and we tried to do it on world and technology and these types of things, and we built that community around it where you predicted the outcomes of events, and you could see if you were the first place and those types of things. And the idea was that, you know, Peacemaker in that context that video game terminology brings. So if you look at video games and you think about the systems they represent and you just try and say that those are great for engaging people and how can I apply that to other industries, you come up with some really interesting fusions. So our little mini games now look a lot like the Peacemaker interface where this would be your headline. So there's the standard article and we have an integrated video. So those would be the mediums that already exist. But then what brief stuff can I coalesce so I'm not following links or going to the library that help me to understand that? So we created this when this was the IOC and sort of the run through Tibet and all those issues that it led to. So you see sort of the timeline of when it was chosen for the Olympics, what it was supposed to do, what the different groups care about, a little bit of geography, some of the things that help you to understand why does that, you know, really matter and why is this such a big issue as opposed to just, wow, they're rioting in the streets of San Francisco. That's crazy. I mean, that's, you know, that's not really understanding the world. And then Peacemaker is really great when you take the role of somebody else because then you feel, you know, empowered to some extent. Either you're voicing your opinion or one of the things that we did with Peacemaker a lot was when you put somebody in that situation, you show them the options of what they can do and you try to explain to them, well, why would you take any of those? Because they're all valid things that you could do, which means somebody thought about doing it. And so it makes you think deeper about that person's perspective as to what action they're going to take. So there's some thinking there that takes you a little bit deeper than just consuming it passively. So in this case, like I said, it's really, I mean, at the base of it, a glorified opinion and prediction poll. But if you sort of deliberative democracy and all those ideas of if I'm better informed, then I'm forced to make decisions, you know, am I thinking deeper on these issues? So we have the what should happen. So if I was China, what would I do in that situation? And then what will happen? What do I really think China's going to do? And that leads to some very interesting statistics of, well, this is what people think the world is really like, and this is what they want it to be like, and all those kinds of conversations. So that's the game stats idea. So in this case, you know, you can see that it's fairly similar across from opinion to prediction. Some questions, you'll see very different things there. And some of the things that we hoped would drive people to engage more is if you see them looking at Facebook, people want what they do to carry with them and be their identity online. So you sort of create your social political profile in that if every time I act, it's sort of recorded, I see how I stack up against the community, I can sort it by all the things that I want. You know, it's sort of, the hope would be that you would engage in content that you would never engage in before. So we saw this as some of our, you know, hyper gamer users. We would publish a game, and before I would actually even go to make sure that it was up there, they would have already played it and maybe commented. Now, they might have come to us because they saw one of our games in some, you know, Middle East, very peacemaker type of game, but then I'm publishing a game about a burger ban in South Central LA, which is really about sort of food laws and sort of the things that are going on with the, you know, national health, and they're playing that too. Now, they might have never read that article before, but because they're so competitive, like the fantasy football model, they know a lot more about things that they may never have engaged in before. Again, you know, trying to get to them where they're people where they're actually consuming this. So we have sort of the Facebook one. In this case, it was somebody on global citizenship saying that we had done a sort of five-year in Iraq anniversary, we created one that tried to sum up some of the things that were happening there. And this person said that it was sort of a better than any news clip they had ever seen because of the type of broad context that they could gain from it. So that's sort of why I'm here, because that's what I'm engaged in. And now before I go to questions, when we first started, it was very difficult for me to go and talk to people and say, I'm making a video game about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, because there was a lot of sensitivity to the fact that we're making a game about something so serious. To the extent that, you know, there were some touchy moments where I was meeting with, you know, Israeli and Palestinian government officials and people like that, and I would start my presentation and, you know, genuine fear, but as you go through it and you show them what you're doing and the sensitivity they're taking to it and that you're actually trying to tell their story as a narrative so that other people can see it, kind of eased into it. But this movement is definitely taken off, and that people see the value of games, they see the value of using this medium. So I could put a whole bunch more into this, but just to give you a sense of what's going on in the community these days. A very straightforward one, and so for those of you that don't play video games, your view might be these sort of first-person shooters where I run around and kill everything. Some other uses of just that straightforward sort of gaming platform is America's Army did a game that was essentially a training simulation intended for kids that, you know, depending on how your feelings, was successful, though, in that it did recruit new people into the Army by playing this game and sort of getting to them where they actually play. To go somewhere else that I think everybody could agree on is good is a group called Hope Lab created a first-person shooter. So if you see this, it's a big cell and there's a little sort of warrior person in the bottom. And it was to create the ability for little kids to simulate fighting cancer inside the bloodstream. So if you're thinking about a kid who's sitting there feeling very vulnerable and unable to do anything and dealing with cancer, you know, here's a chance for them to play a video game and feel empowered that they're actually sort of going out and doing something. Another one was Food Force. It takes a lot of those sort of driving games that you see, a little bit of the flying games, and just made a fun game. I think it was, I don't know what the numbers are now, but over the millions of downloads where kids were playing this game, and I don't know that there's not a whole lot of deep learning about what the, you know, the World Food Program does from playing this game, but people know that they exist and the types of programs they're doing, and to some extent, you know, maybe there's a 10, 12-year-old out there that's going to say, when I grow up, I want to work for the World Food Program, which probably wasn't happening before they put this game out, because I don't know if they would have even known that it was that. Some of the things that we know that are great for video games are obviously training simulations, things that you don't want people to fail at when they're doing it in real life. So we don't want people crashing planes. Another application of that same kind of statistical analysis, training simulation, some of the things that are out there was A Force More Powerful is an organization that it started with a book, then there was sort of a DVD, and what they do is they overthrow governments, essentially. They teach nonviolent revolutions. And so also one of those things that you don't want to fail at because you don't get too many chances at it. And you also have a problem sending people in to train people, because anytime they go into one of these places to train nonviolent revolution, they run the risk of not coming back. So they thought it might be a good idea to create a video game that they could send in, that they could play and practice these types of skills. I guess we were talking about on the way over here a little bit, so I'll address this side of it this time. Another thing that's great about games is it's a really good way to learn a system. Like, I would say I learned a lot about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict in just trying to create that game. So there's a couple groups. This is one from New York that works with kids to create games. So in this game, I won a couple of awards. It's about growing up in Haiti. So the kids came together, said they wanted to create a game that would help people understand what it's like in Haiti today. So obviously those kids learned a lot about what's going on in Haiti today and creating the game. Then they created a product that can then educate people about what's going on. So that idea of sort of documentary, the reason I put an Inconvenient Truth, and some of the things we look at is, you know, how do we get video games that are very powerful to have that same esteem? So there was lots of documentary films out there, and I think a select few of us might watch them because we're curious. And all of a sudden now we have a mainstream movie that was in, you know, every cinema imaginable, and people are watching movies about global warming and those types of issues that they might have never cared about before. So that's sort of my hope for where the medium goes. Another one thing that we talk about in Peacemaker, some of the learning came from being very, very frustrated. So there is something to failing at video games and wondering, well, how do I do this? It's very difficult as a Palestinian to do anything because how do I get money and I don't have any resources and those types of things. Or these things keep happening that I didn't want to happen because they're outside of my control as a leader. So I had my agenda and then something happened. So that emotional response really makes it so that you remember it and that you're engaged in the content. So this was a game called Hush that somebody made. It's a very short game. You may have all seen the Guitar Hero games and the rock bands and those types of things. Very simple interface in that, you know, there's something that shows up and you have to sort of beat match it. So in this one, there's sort of the young woman with the baby in the bottom left corner, and it plays a lot like Guitar Hero. So there's sleep comes and there's a really nice musical track and you have to match it. And anytime you mess up, the baby starts to cry. And in that back window, you'll see the troops going by. And when the baby cries, they come closer. And so if you fail, I mean, sort of understood. But so it doesn't really teach you anything necessarily very deep about what's going on in Darfur. But for people that may have gotten this sent to them because it was very emotionally powerful, maybe they care in a different way than they did before because they had that visceral response to what's going on. So these are just some of the things that games can do that other media may not be able to do as well. News gaming came about, really coined as a phrase by a group in Spain that created a game called 9/12. So obviously the day after 9/11. And it was just sort of a social commentary on the idea of a war on terror. Very simple game. Essentially, there's people walking around. You can sort of pick out the one who's the terrorist, if you will, because he was armed. And when you shoot that one, because you have your crosshairs, sort of multiplies and there's more of them. So obviously it's an unwinnable game. So it's not so much a game that you can win, but it's using interactivity to make a statement that would be very, you know, I guess mundane if you just wrote it that way. And this goes to something that I love, political cartoons. So again, a lot of those get spread because, did you see that? That was really funny. And so it is an emotional response because it's making you laugh. So you remember it, so you share it. Ian Bogost is sort of famous for these, and he created one called Airport Security, and he's done some other ones where you're trying to go through the airport security line, and things pop up, and as the people are coming through, you have to decide whether they're allowed to go through or not allowed to go through. And I mean, there's random stuff like steer horns that will show up as not allowed items, and really just sort of modeling that. On any given day, I have no idea what I'm allowed to bring on an airplane, what I'm not allowed to bring on an airplane, and those types of things. So this was just sort of an interactive way to sort of poke fun at that. And I think he went through a period of getting, you know, searched every time he went to the airport after he put this game out. But again, sort of makes the point in an interactive way that, you know, frustration and things come into it. So there's some other things, like NPR put out one that's Budget Hero. So playing with budget. So again, things that where you're trying to, I mean, I don't think you're ever going to get a kid to sit down and read extensive articles about how budgets work and why they're complex. So trying to find other ways to both entice people, and then, I mean, honestly, things like we tried to create a game about OPEC. I still don't think I understand how OPEC fundamentally works because I can't play with all the things and see how it's actually shifting. So there's some things that just don't do well in sort of the written word that I think games are great for addressing. some of the things that I think a lot of people are trying to do now is how do you transfer that addiction we have to being on the computer and sort of that funny idea that we think we're being green, we're on the computer, but we're actually sucking on the power grid and all those sort of trade-offs. But so how do we take that same addiction and then make it actually do something in the real world? So whether that's global awareness, MTV did a Darfur is Dying game where you ran around and at the end they ask you to write a letter, and they had some forms and things that you could do to sort of activate you in the community when you were done. Didn't turn out to be as effective as they wanted, but people are searching for that way to take that, I can do it very personally at home by myself, but I'm interacting with the world and then I'm actually going to go out and do something. In this case, it's a game called Free Rice. It's essentially if you wanted to sort of play a trivia game, but every time you got one right, a rice grain showed up in this bowl and then was sent to somewhere where they needed food. I guess it was sponsored by companies. I don't know that this is a sustainable model, that we could do this for all the world's problems, but it's a great way of showing that enticing somebody to do something they might already be doing, making it for good, can actually sort of be a synergy of games and those types of things. I love this guy on some levels because it's sort of the pet rock of the 21st century. But it's called the ESP game. And he talks about, Louis von Ahn talks about human computing. So there's still a lot of things that computers can't do well, but that people can do well. And using gaming technology, he's finding ways to harness people's wasted time on the internet to do these really good things. So in this case, it's sort of a picture of a man. And I would get paired with somebody, well, around the world. I don't know if he's done it for multiple languages yet. But so you have to keep typing in words until we match on a word. So it's sort of the ESP game. Can I, mastermind what the other person's thinking? But we're doing it with an image in mind, and we're trying to pick something that we agree matches it. And I think you do it for sort of 5 words, and then he'll sort of database those and try again and make it more and more comfortable. What you're doing is you're tagging all of the images on the web so that you know you can go on the internet and type in dog, and who knows what's coming back in those images. Some things you might not even want to look at, and especially not down to refine things. And so this allows you to sort of harness that in a game environment and make that vast amount of knowledge usable to the rest of the people. How many of you have been tested to see if you're a human when signing onto a web page or registering for something? Well, if you look at that one, that was a security technique to put all the crosses and weird words that you can barely read. There's one now that if you see it, it says reCAPTCHA, same guy. And one of those words, they know what it is. The other word, they have no idea. So you're typing in both of those, and it knows that you were right on the one, and then it's sort of logging that. And so there's a big push now to digitize all the books that were ever written, and they're scanning them in. And so, I mean, to a lot of people, it's sort of a cost per word. When you do it through a computer, there's a percentage of times it's wrong and those types of things. So now in something that we have to do every day just to prove we're humans, we're actually digitizing like the Library of Congress and places like that where they just have millions and millions of words. So again, it's one of those ones where it's kind of like a game, but he's using it for all these other methods. Virtual worlds. So Global Kids is a great group that does this, and inner city youth creates gaming environments. I think the part of this that stands out for me that's so amazing is that you start to connect with people around the world without even really realizing it. And hopefully this will be one of those things that creates those empathy meters from our game that make it more difficult for some of these conflict situations to arise. And like I was saying, I met a bunch of people in the Middle East and all over the world, and I end up in these gaming environments. They've got better American slang than I do because they're living in these worlds with people, and sort of those boundaries of communication are sort of falling around. So I think these are very interesting. ARGs are an interesting one where there'll be websites, phone numbers you can call, you have to find information. So it's not really a game in a classical sense. And they're really good in terms of trying to engage communities outside of those gaming worlds. I could show it to you guys. Well, that's on my other computer. The British Red Cross just started one of these to try and sort of increase awareness around Uganda. So when I signed up, I got an email. I went to this email. There was all these messages. There was sort of me following a conversation. They sent me to YouTube to watch a video. I'm supposed to wait for an email, and then I'm supposed to write to some guy. And so it's just sort of a funner way to engage and get you to go and look at websites and look at things and see personal stories and those types of things and engage in the world outside of just sort of a focused one, and really promote me dealing with the community in order to do it. Some of the places you can find things that are going on in this space are Serious Games, Games for Change, Water Cooler Games. Like, they're really starting to be a lot more of these every day. I talked to Aspen Idea Festival when I was on a panel with Justice O'Connor, because all these different groups are now looking to games, and how some of it is, how can I just engage the next generation in sort of the medium they know? Others are, is this a good way to actually disseminate this information that's different? So there's more stuff coming on every day. So that's pretty much what I got. I'm happy to answer any questions.
You've been listening to Alaska World Affairs Council Presents, Eric Brown, co-founder and CEO of Impact Games. Recorded on Friday, January 23rd, he asked, "Can video games promote peace?" You can view Mr. Brown's slideshow presentation and link to all the video games he previewed on our website. It's kska.org. Following his talk, Mr. Brown responded to questions from the audience. First, he was asked to clarify how the ESP game, which he discussed, is played. "Are you playing with a person or a computer?" an audience member asked.
"You're playing against a person. So the idea is that you get matched with somebody, and we have to keep throwing words out until we agree. Because a computer can scan an image and look for something in like the face recognition software that everybody's trying to do, but we might agree that, it's a cute puppy or it's a brown cute puppy, whereas a computer's not going to be able to come up with that. But if we come up with it, then it's probably a much more accurate tag than, a automated computer system would find for us. So they put a picture up, and you don't get to move on until you both agree on words for that image. And, of course, it's filtered for pornography and those types of things. So.
Like the other video games he discussed, an audience member wanted to know, are there any impact games that involve community elements, like multiplayer settings that allow small communities to connect in these world simulation type games?
Yeah, so we would love to. I think that one of the things that's sort of a misconception is for trying to tie it to reality, it actually becomes more complex to design it so it's multiplayer, but the players are still constrained by the realities of the world, than it is to make it a one-person simulation. We definitely want more community interaction, but we don't want to run the risk of then it sort of leaving the reality of what's going on. So,
what was the West High School student's reaction to your presentation? Another audience member asked. And what was your reaction to them?
They're starting to be the same as kids everywhere. I think that's the thing that's changing is the internet and all these things mean that we're all consuming a lot of the same things from all over the place. We have the ability to find our niche communities of people that like the same things that we do. So, I found the people that are hardcore gamers and could list games that I've never even heard of because they can find those communities online. So they were very curious. They were very, I followed Arun Gandhi, which I was impressed to find him in the same school with me as I was going in. And this is the second time I followed him in a presentation. And that's it's a tough act to follow when you're talking about conflict resolution. But there was a lot of people there, and they came. And I think they're genuinely interested and seemed interested by sort of the medium that they engage in and how they can use it. Facebook and some of these things and the way that they can sign up for causes and start these waves of stuff. And I guess the free rice game that I showed had been posted around your school because people thought it was great and wanted to engage in it. So even all the way over here, they really do care about the broader world, et cetera.
Have you ever considered using Google Earth to enhance players' geographical understanding of events happening around the world? In the case of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it seems as though a map of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip could be particularly helpful.
Yeah, it's a great point. We started with our geography of our background being just Israel with Gaza and the West Bank and things like the Green Line and settlements. And that was informative enough because a lot of people don't understand, like you're saying, just that the West Bank and Gaza are separate. I think people understand it more now with the Hamas elections and things like that. But then we actually had to do a zoom out because we started realizing that people didn't really know where Israel was relative to Egypt and Jordan and places like that are also very important to understand in terms of those things. We were at a conference with some people from National Geographic that gave us a horrible stat that there is a percentage of students that can't find the Pacific Ocean on a globe. So I think geography is very important. Google Map has done some really interesting things. I don't know what they have going now. It's been a while since I played around with it, but they did one for Darfur where you could zoom in, and a lot of the historical things that had happened recently were actually highlighted on the map so you could see them and those types of things. And I've seen some really interesting ones where there's sort of historical splash overlays where you can sort of follow a timeline of those regions. Yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and I think geography is a big part of some of these issues as well.
Aside from making these video games available on the internet, have you considered making them available in some of the video parlors popular in many major cities?
I'll answer with sort of a broader statement in that I think like any medium, there's always going to be entertainment time and sort of thinking time. So there are people that go to the movie theater because they want to see a Van Damme movie or whatever might be an action film. And if they're going to do that, they're probably not going to go see a documentary film because the time that they're sort of allotting for what they're going to do. I think that video games can be compelling. We've done it with students where we had to drag them away and force them to stop playing Peacemaker. I think if they were going there with their friend to, you know, a casual video game parlor, the odds of them clicking on that game when they have sort of their entertainment mindless time sort of carved out. So I think there's room for both mediums, but like we would rather be in a bookstore selling our game because that's what the expectation is, that I'm going in and I'm just trying to look for an interesting way to learn about something as opposed to, you know, you're bombarding me with learning when I'm trying to sort of have entertainment. I think that there could be games that could cross over, that you could put them there and they would unknowingly be playing really fun games and learning and those types of things. But I think just like anything else, there's always going to be a separation between what is, you know, pure fun, enjoyment, entertainment time and what is sort of my learning time. But, I mean, we put them on those computers.
In the case of the Peacemaker game, how do we know if something that begins as logical will become behavioral, an audience member asked.
I mean, that's the million, if not billion-dollar question, I guess. And that, I mean, if you look at how we funded schools, because we talk about our software being semi-educational in terms of critical thinking, social sciences, and those types of things. They can do those quantifiable studies very easily on math and things like that where you can really say this person learned more from doing this. When you're talking about sort of critical thinking, social sciences, and those types of things, how would you quantify that? And there's a lot of money being spent on that question by groups like the MacArthur Foundation. Do games actually help you learn better and those types of things? The Entertainment Software Association, the ESA, has done lots of studies to try and figure out, does violence in video games translate to real-world violence and things like that? I mean, those are just, you know, really difficult scientific experiments to do because what's your control factor and things like that. So I could point you in directions of studies. I'm not necessarily going to comment one way or the other in terms of, you know, does video game violence lead to real-world violence and those types of things.
Ultimately, after distributing this game in the Middle East, is there any evidence that the game has been effective?
Had it done what we wanted, this last escalation wouldn't have happened, obviously. So I would say that no, there's been loss of life since we put the game out, and there continues to be. So in terms of those objectives, we have done, CMU did a study, sort of strategical decision making before, after the game. What did people come in with the conceptions? Did they have different outputs? Those types of things. Anecdotally, did the person think about it? But I wouldn't even know where to frame the quantitative question that would sort of satisfy me and be able to do that control study to understand it. So we just sort of have to think that, you know, anecdotally, yes, we can put it out there, and anything's better than doing nothing to some extent.
In reference to prediction markets and military simulation in video games, has Impact Games ever considered modeling conflicts in advance and using the games as military tools available for government use? Secondly, he wanted to know if Mr. Brown had ever read the book Ender's Game.
I have a great story for that one. So the first one being is, A, we don't have the military DARPA budgets. So the multi-millions of dollars that you would spend to do that data crunching, aggregation, building it into a simulation, things like that, those do go on. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, are they accurate? All of those sort of come down to, well, what stats are you using, who's generating them, and, you know, what assumptions are you building into your equations? Ours was more simplified, A, because of budget, B, because it was intended as more of a a visceral takeaway than it was a statistical model for an actual negotiator in the Middle East to use our game and plan out how he was going to do something and those types of ideas. So I will leave the, you know, mega computer number crunching to powers larger than me. I do lecture at the Army War College and some places like that. So, I mean, there is a differentiation between sort of the consumer-oriented or, you know, that level of engagement versus the statistical modeling environmental ones where can you put everything into there and do we have computers big enough to crunch all those and do the probabilities. So we're going towards the lower end of the spectrum. The Ender's Game one. So how many people have heard of Craigslist? Do you all know what Craigslist is? So we released Peacemaker, and how many of you know what Ender's Game is, the sci-fi book? How many of you who haven't will actually read the book, so if I ruin the whole ending, are going to be pissed? Well, cover your ears if you are. So the basic premise is that Ender's Game is, you know, a kid raised because we're in the War of Worlds, and he needs to, they're trying to find the chosen general who will win this whole thing. And so they keep training him, and they're working him harder and harder and harder. And, you know, can they break him? Is he the one? All those types of things. And then the curtain's removed, and he had won the battle. And, oh, by the way, he was actually manipulating the real troops. It wasn't training simulations. It was the real thing. So the idea there being is, could we have everybody playing Peacemaker? They come up with the solution, and then we enact it, kind of a thing. So Craig Newmark of Craigslist calls me up. I don't know how he got my number. And I come out of a meeting, and I'm listening to it, and he's like, "Hey, this is Craig Newmark of Craigslist. You may have heard of it." It's like, "I've heard of it." And so that was his thing, because obviously he's into wisdom of the crowds and big things and universal. So when he called me up, he was like, "So I was thinking, could you do the massively multiplayer version? Have you read Ender's Game?" And I was like, "And no, I can't do that. I don't have the resources." But I mean, to some extent, that's the idea behind Play the News, is the wisdom of the crowds. That if we had enough people playing that and they were putting their opinion and their predictions, then just like, you know, all of the polling systems that are out there and whether you agree with their systems for how they generate, you know, what the voters are actually going to do, those numbers become very intriguing and could actually, you know, does Obama sit down and read what Impact Games players thought Obama should vote on something? And so that then influences and all of those types of.
It seems as though Impact Games is pretty dependent on the digital world, an audience member stated. What is the status of the digital gap? What will it look like in 10 years? And is the gap decreasing, he asked.
That is not a couple-minute question. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to answer that. I mean, one is that the digital gap, when you look at sort of the one laptop per child kind of programs and things like that, is starting to go down. Now, whether you philosophically agree that that's the answer to the world's woes is something completely different. I do see, you know, much as the question of how are students in Alaska different than students elsewhere that we've gone to, is there is that beautiful moment that the digital divide allows people to have access to lots of different things. So I would have never... I guess I would have maybe. Facebook and things like that, where those type of social networks become ingrained in these people's daily routines, and then that grows and the causes that come from that and the way that people meet each other. So if you ask me what it's going to look like in 10 years, I have no idea. I mean, that's part of why the mission of our company was not that we make games that address social issues in current events, is that, you know, we make interactives, because I don't know how people are going to interact as we move forward, and I don't, you know, we just want to respond to that. And wherever people go, whether it's mobile, I mean, I think that you see a lot of different disparities sort of around the world of, you know, what is the medium that people use? In some places, people are addicted to their mobile phones and they're not on the computers as much. Here, maybe we're on computers a lot, and the different ways that we use them. So there's a lot of cultural undertones to that one.
Thank you. You've been listening to Eric Brown, co-founder and CEO of Impact Games. Recorded on Friday, January 23rd, he asked the Alaska World Affairs Council to consider, can video games promote peace? And he took questions from the audience. You can view Brown's slideshow presentation and link to all the video games he previewed on our website. It's kska.org. These broadcasts are produced by KSKA Public Radio in partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council. Visit KSKA.org to sign up for free podcasts of Alaska World Affairs Council Presents. You can also sign up for email updates about the show and share your comments with us and other listeners online at KSKA.org. This has been a presentation of KSKA in partnership with the Alaska World Affairs Council. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.